The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is Friday, the 30th of August, 5 minutes past nine, and it is another 9 till noon show. We have our Friday panel, who will introduce to you very shortly, but just want to invite you to get involved in the conversation. If you want to, WhatsApp or text us, 086 60 25000. That's 086 60 25000. You can give us a call to 07491 25000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. and if it suits you, maybe the kids are away to school, you want to watch the show, you can open up your smart TV, your Fire Stick, the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland. We're on the X platform as well, and on Facebook, just search Highland Radio, you'll get us there. All right, so no excuses. Emma Gover, the wee Donegal mammy. Good morning to you, Emma.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Lovely to have you. Great to see you. I'm fantastic, thanks. Senator Eileen Flynn. Good morning, Eileen. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to all your listeners.
Very good. And have you got any new starters at school this year, Eileen?
Yes, I have. I have Billy, who just started on Wednesday. I must say it was such an emotional week, and I'd imagine there's many other mothers and fathers around the country feeling like that. And then I have Lacey starting preschool on Monday. So, yeah.
How quickly does time go? It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is absolutely. Is your little boy starting preschool this year?
He's in NINRA, but he sort of was doing it last year a bit, but he's in 5 days a week. But still, it feels like a milestone or a big deal. So it's a nice thing, and you'd feel it'd give you more time, but strangely, it actually doesn't seem to give you any more time. It's more complication, but it's all good. It's all good. Liam Mulligan, retired electronic engineer and member of AINTU. Good morning to you, Liam. How are you getting on?
Morning, Greg. Very well, thank you.
Good to have you with us as well. Right, protests were held in Dublin and Belfast this week after a temporary ban on the sale or supply of puberty blockers was extended to Northern Ireland. The First Minister, Michelle O'Neill, defended Sinn Féin's position after criticism of the party's stance. She said her party wants the best possible medical support for children and young people who need trans healthcare. The CAST review states that the pillars of gender medicine are built on shaky foundations, as there's a lack of evidence on the impacts of puberty blockers and hormone treatments. And its publication in the UK really was the catalyst for these recent bans. However, in the Republic of Ireland, the Education Minister Norma Foley has ruled out any immediate ban on puberty blockers. Emma Gover, I'll start with you. What's your view on this? I suppose, in the first instance, the ban in Northern Ireland, but secondly, I suppose, the fact that we in the Republic are not sort of following the UK's lead on this.
Well, firstly, I think it's only fair to state that although I myself am a heterosexual female and I identify as the gender I was born, I am an LGBTQ ally. Somebody very close to me is transgender. So it's a sensitive subject for us. However, I do have serious concerns where puberty blockers are in the mix, because my concern is the medical implications. You know, do we know the long-term effect? And I know a number of young people who were transitioning and then decided they wanted to transition back, and that's absolutely fine. That's their decision. But do we know the long-term effects these puberty blockers will have? Do we know the effect it will have on their mental health? Because as we know, teenagers, their hormones are running riot anyway. It can be a very difficult time for them. And that would be my concern. And yeah, I would have concern. I don't have an issue with somebody who is an adult, you know, saying I would like to take a hormone blocker and I want to surgically change my body. They're an adult, and that is absolutely their decision to do that. And I think they should be supported if that's the path they are taking. But I do have concerns in using puberty blockers in young children. I to be honest, I have severe reservations about it. I don't think it should be done. I think that there's nothing. I know a number of teenagers who have lived as the opposite gender to which they were born, the gender that they then identify as. And I do think, you know, there's, you know, people absolutely need support. But I think, you know, immediately going in with medical transitioning you know, my concern is, as I've said, there are some teenagers who have come back and said, actually, this is not what I want. Mm-hmm. And do we know the lasting effect of these puberty blockers? Do we know the lasting, as you said yourself, some reports have said it's very shaky.
Yeah, we don't really know, because their use in this form, and they were originally used as a treatment, I think for prostate cancer. We don't actually know because they haven't been used long enough. But that being said, some might say, well, we took medical advice in other areas at very, very short notice. I think most listeners might know, generally speaking, puberty blockers would start at the beginning of puberty, about 10 or 11. They do say that that is reversible and puberty will kick back in. But then, you know, maybe 14, 15, normally around 16, the person might then start taking hormone treatments, and that mm-hmm. does in people born female, that does interfere with in fertility and also to bone density and what have you, and in those born male, it stops the development of the penis.
That would be my concern, and you know, I want to stress, because there is a lot of transphobia at the moment globally. I have nothing against transgender people. As I've said, somebody very close to me is transgender. They are loved very much by me, supported very much by me. My concern is solely based on medical research and do we know enough about these puberty blockers? And bear in mind too, let's be honest, I mean, you know, we have, it may be an unpopular opinion, I'm sure it will be. I'm sure there may be people who will come at me for this, but these are children we're talking about. At the end of the day, you know, these are, you know, if you're talking about starting these puberty blockers at 10 and 11, these are children that would still be in national school, you know, and somebody here has to be the adult in the room and say, listen, I think you should give yourself some time.
Well, that's
absolutely.
Give them the support they need. That's the argument.
Give them the support they need.
The argument for puberty blockers is it actually does give some time. That's what the argument being, that it defers.
Yeah, I have real medical concerns about puberty blockers and also the regulation of it, you know, because if there is a child who maybe has an underlying medical condition that we don't know of, that has not actually presented, you know, could they have an adverse effect on these children? And that would be my sole concern. As I said, I still believe that anybody who identifies as transgender and comes to an adult and says, this is how I'm feeling, this is how I identify, should absolutely be supported and given all the support that they need. Mm-hmm. 110%. You know, but I just have real concerns with chemically mixing with somebody who's so young's hormones.
I don't know anyone's views ahead of asking these questions. Eileen Flynn, Senator Eileen Flynn, what's your view?
Personally, Greg, like Emma, I believe in live and let live, you know. I don't have personal experience around trans issues. I am aware that the puberty blockers are used for children who start puberty very early, and that blocking the puberty, banning the puberty blockers, it's only banning it for trans children. It's not banning it for other children. And to me, that is really unfair. Emma made a very critical point around as an adult, and someone has to be responsible. We've seen the protests in Belfast recently, where parents were very, very eloquent, speaking out for the rights of their children. So to me, it's an inequality to host trans children to just block, have puberty blockers just for trans.
But just in relation to that, Eileen, just in relation to that, and I'm not being argumentative, but and listen, we have to talk about certain things. I know it might be a bit early for some, but I'm no doctor, of course. But if a girl starts puberty early, you know, 6, 7, 8, or something along those lines, and begins having periods, that is really, you know, if you can intervene in that and allow her to sort of delay that until the normal time, which is getting earlier all the time, around 10 and a half, 11, right? Is that the same as giving them to a child that says they're trans at 10 or 11 to stop their voice deepening, to stop the growth of a, to stop the growth of hair, to stop the growth of breasts. I mean, I know where exactly where you're coming from, where it might feel like it's discriminating against two different groups of children. But for me, just to put the question to you, they seem like two incredibly different scenarios.
That's what, like, we're discussing this, and as far as I know, none of us here and the panel has that experience at So, again, Greg, going on from what Emma said and what you've just said as well, you know, none of us are health professionals, and I don't think I am best placed to comment because I'm not a health professional when it comes to puberty.
But you know what you are, Eileen, and I think it's really important, though. You're a mum, though. You know,
sorry, Greg?
What I think is more important than that is you're a mum. Do you know what I mean? And Emma's a mum, and it's what you feel is right. Because as Emma said, you know, she's an LGBTQ plus ally, but that also can mean that you want to make sure for children under that banner that they are getting the best treatment possible. And maybe we, you know, the government is saying at this point they're going to continue the use of puberty blockers. So I know we're not experts, but I think our opinions are really important, Eileen.
Yeah, and as a mother, Greg, I think it's really important. And just recently I was speaking to one of my friends around this. She had a child with a special additional needs with Down syndrome. And I remember having a conversation with her and saying, look, nobody wants their child to be different. Nobody wants their child, although we can be LGBTQI plus allies, nobody wants their child to be gay. Nobody wants their child to be trans or have special additional needs. We all want our children to have whatever a normal life may be, because life can be very hard, and trans children can be very difficult, and traveller children and children with disabilities getting treated less in society. So no mother wants that, you know. And I will say one thing, it's actually a shame that what we're seeing in England around the caste report, it's becoming now more around political than a health issue. And it is a health issue, Greg, if we like it or don't like it. I know, I'm mindful that my children might, we girls can listen back to this in 15, 20 years, and I don't want to be just speaking on behalf of my own two children. But as a mother, I'll do whatever I can to support them. And again, if a child have dyslexia, dyspraxia, nobody wants that for their kids, but it's unfortunate we have to deal with it. And it's the same way with trans issues as well. And I actually think what's really sad about us, like, as a panel, and you're just doing your job, Greg, as a journalist, you know, and as a presenter, but we're making a health issue a political issue. None of us have a clue around puberty blockers.
Just in relation to two things. Firstly, just in case your beautiful daughters are listening back to this in 15 years, when I referenced Eileen as a mum, I didn't actually mean as it relates to your children. I just mean as a responsible caregiving adult, okay? But anyway, that's fine.
What I mean, Greg, like if Billy was to start her periods at 8 or 6, and if I listening to a doctor, a professional doctor that describes the puberty blockers, I'd be taking that advice. Do you know what I mean? So that's what I just didn't want to say.
No, I get you. But in relation to the care of children more generally, like, I'm not a social worker, but if I think there could be potential issues with how Tusla cares for children, I do feel that, you know, we do need to be able to have a voice. And And like, I know what you're referencing is this sort of, you know, pitch between very high profile trans people in Britain and very high profile, like J.K. Rowling, for an example, who's very anti. That doesn't interest me. What interests me is the welfare of all of our children collectively, because I think it takes a country to raise a child. Liam Mulligan, do you have a view on this? I'm sure you do.
Yes, Greg. Like, as the others have said, I would have friends who are gay, relations, people I care for. I look at the CAST report as a hard scientist, as a medical report, first and foremost. And the CAST report looks at what is happening and what is necessary. And there's two stages towards whether you give somebody a chemical treatment, a drug treatment. One, the check, is this an effective treatment for this thing and what are the risks associated with it identified? Then for the individual actually being treated, is this the appropriate treatment? What are the risks of non-treatment versus the risk of treatment? What are the alternative risks? And what the CAS report identified was that we hadn't had sufficient actual trials of underage, of significant use of the puberty blockers, and it needed more information. And, you know, people are desperate for solutions and they always want a shortcut. But if we don't, they'll be coming back in a few years, hopefully not like, say, thalidomide, who is obviously the ultimate disaster of not testing drugs properly. But they could be coming back in a few years saying, oh, this problem has arisen because you didn't test it properly. You jumped in to take a solution, a shortcut to the solution without testing it properly. Then a major element of the CAS report was that the actual evaluation of the treatment mode for the person with gender dysphoria, gender confusion, was being shortcutted as well, that there was a heavily bias towards drug treatment, towards intervention. And this led to the people who chose to trans and then wanted to reverse it. And this is the issue in CAS, and this is why we have this at least temporary stop on the puberty blockers. CAS was very supportive of gender change as a treatment for gender dysphoria. It's purely at these levels, the scientific thing is this has to be checked out more. And at the next level, do not presuppose the treatment without doing a full diagnosis, without looking at the full alternatives. So it's very difficult for people whose children are showing this gender dysphoria, gender confusion, to be told, no, we can't go this route. It's very difficult for them. But this is a medical report, not a political report. And we have to go back and do the medical. I mean, you quote as a case we've had very recently of drugs being given to people without proper testing, or the normal testing, and that was in the COVID vaccines. Now, I took the COVID vaccines. I let my children take the COVID vaccines, but there were issues, and there are going to be issues arising. And one of the great difficulties is that in that particular case, I was standing in the queue to get vaccinated and they handed me the leaflet. And that's the first time I got a full information on then known possible problems. And I didn't really get a chance to read it till I was sitting down afterwards. And I had to ring my wife immediately and said, you cannot take this AstraZeneca. You have to go for the other one. And she could have been the one that was standing in the queue. No, so all I'm saying is, without any bias on the question of whether gender change is an appropriate treatment for any individual at all, there are steps to be taken, that the risks are fully understood of the treatment, and then the question whether the treatment is appropriate to the individual concerned. And so at the moment, the situation is, I think we have to block the puberty blockers for that thing, but not saying that it would be blocked forever.
All right, Eileen, did you want to come back in there?
Yeah, just to say that, we're talking about the CAS report, and I've read through it a good bit myself as well. We have to remember this was done by one doctor in England, okay? And for me, I've done some research on Canada and America, and we see that Canada children's doctors would be in support and still stand by the puberty blockers. The same with America, the biggest organization for children's health in America, Dr. Ben Heffernan. Hefferman, he've done a report as well in talking around how he supports the puberty blockers. And I just think, like, you know, we need to educate ourselves, and most importantly, we need to speak, because I'm not the professional in the room, far from it, when it comes to health issues like puberty blockers. And I just think that's really important that we state that. And we have to remember, puberty blockers has been in existence around the world for decades and decades, and have been prescribed by doctors for young people who start in puberty at a very young age. And I think it's like, while it's a trans issue as well, it's also an issue for young children, as we said earlier in the programme, Greg.
So, and as I say, this is not to counter what you're saying, because I'm not coming from a position, but it's for the purpose of a conversation. And these conversations are happening in people's houses in any case, because people have opinions on stuff. But it's my concern is for all children. And I'm just like, my concern would be that how can we trust, as the adults that should be caring for children, how can we trust a 10 or 11 year old to give them a drug that alters their chemistry in the way that it does? You know, we often give out about the Leaving Cert, and we say, God, it's crazy, we expect a 16 year old to be able to know what they want to do with their career. We should change the Leaving Cert because it's an awful lot of pressure, right? We don't allow under 18s to get tattoos, we don't allow them to go on sunbeds, we don't allow them to smoke. There's a ton of stuff, right? But in this one particular area, and I think it's because it's so sensitive and we really do care about kids, we seem to be able to trust a 10 or 11 year old to take a decision that may well affect them throughout their entire life, yet we are nervous about them deciding what course to take in the Leaving Cert. And that, for me, I don't understand how this is in such isolation. Emma Gwan, did you want to come in there?
If I could just come back in there, Greg, just to make a point on what Senator Flynn was saying there about it only being blocked for transgender children. Like, if a medical report has come out and suggested that we don't know enough about these drugs, then in my personal opinion, and I could be wrong and I'm willing to be educated, I want to be honest and say that, but then it should be blocked for all children.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, but it should. If there is concerns that there is something medically wrong with this treatment, then it should be blocked for all children. All children. We shouldn't be messing with any children's hormones if we're concerned about what this drug does.
Yeah,
that's my issue with it as well, Greg. Absolutely. That's the issue I have with it, that if it's going to be blocked, like if it's that much of a health issue, why isn't it blocked for all children?
Well, because
and
CAS
that's
report,
where the inequality the
CAS,
and the discrimination comes in for
of course,
me.
Of course, but I think it's discrimination, but that's fine. It doesn't matter what I think. But the CAS report was like any inquiry, like the Omar bomb inquiry is just a beginning, right? And there is one person at the head of that. But they source information from many, many different places, and then they deliver their outcomes. So it's not just one person's opinion on this. And the ramifications for taking puberty blockers for the purpose of deferring puberty are not just physical or bone density or what have you, because puberty blockers, they say, actually aren't damaging to your health. Though there's not a great deal of science to suggest that, right? But there's an emotional element to this as well, isn't it? Isn't there? I mean, that's what we have to factor in here.
Well,
about what impact is it going to have on a 10 or 11 year old if, even if they identify as the opposite gender or another gender, let me put it like that, as they're on the puberty blockers hitting 12, 13, 14, they aren't developing like those around them. You know, what's the mental impacts of that? And then you go, oh, well, you can take it back and you'll start puberty at 15. And it all gets very, very complicated. I want to make sure we're doing the right thing for the children, Emma.
Yeah, you see, this is my concern. My concern is even about, you know, my concern around this is the medical impact it will have on any child, be they transgender or be they a child who started puberty early. If there is a report out there that says we are not sure of the long-term lasting effects of this treatment, or, you know, that it's a bit shaky, the information we have on it, then I don't think we should be giving it to any children. And that's the truth. You know, when I knew that we were going to be discussing this today, very, very somebody very close to me who is transgender, is an adult transgender, and I discussed it with them. I said, you know, I'm going to be discussing this scenario. I'm just preempting you in case you hear anything and I say anything that may hurt you. It wouldn't be intentional because, you know, I support you 110%. And what they said was, no, you see, this is what's wrong with the world. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. And they said, let's discuss your opinion. And I was talking to them about my genuine concerns. And what they said to me was, listen, I completely understand where you're coming from. And that's one of the reasons I personally didn't take hormone blockers or puberty blockers, because I was concerned of the medical impact it would have on me. Mm-hmm. But he said, it has to be every individual's choice. Now, I agree with that when the person is an adult.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm just concerned that, you know, let's be honest here. And it may be an unpopular opinion, and it, you know, I probably could lose 500 followers by this evening for saying it, but here's the thing. You know, I have to be authentic to myself. And my concern is a 10 or 11 year old able to make an informed decision like a 22 year old, 23 year old, 24 year old who has lived a little in life?
Well, that's what we have to make sure.
Okay.
Liam, before we move on,
saying about you can't drink or smoke until you're 18. We all know that young people, unfortunately, can't. I smoked from the age of 12. Do you know what I mean? And young people are out there doing things that we don't agree with, and they will be trying. Do you know what I mean? I just want to come back, Greg, to one of your comments around, like, it wasn't just the one-handed report. Of course, I understand that it was based on the evidence. But I was once, I remember actually being in college one time and we were doing research, and I remember one of the lecturers saying, you'll find the evidence you're looking for if you search hard enough. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying to your listeners that there's more than just this one cash report. I'm not saying I'm for or against it. I want what's best for children. But you know what I mean? I just want to say that children are very clever at the age of 10 and 11. I'm not saying I'm in favour or I'm against children at that age. That's my own personal view. But again, I don't want to hurt any mother, because nobody knows the shoe was cut them, only the person that's wearing them. And if the mother, like, you know, if their child says they want to be like, I don't know what that's like, right?
Okay, I get where you're coming from, Eileen, but I think sometimes too, we have to support parents, because parenting can be a very lonely position, and we'll do anything we want for our children, but sometimes we need guidance and protection ourselves as adults. Liam, I'm sorry, come in there, please.
No, I mean, one of the big problems, and this is more the second phase rather than the actual drugs themselves, is the diagnosis of what the child is actually saying. The children, if you're pre-puberty, do you actually understand gender properly to begin with? And do you have the language to express your feelings properly? You know, you go from the extreme, the old, a girl saying, I would love to be a boy, because she would traditionally have been restricted from activities because she wasn't a boy. And we're getting rid of most of that. So most of those ones will go away. But their ability to actually express what they're feeling. And this means that we have to have a process to go through before, and this was actually a major element of the CAS report, we have to have a process to go through before we decide what is actually needed, before we decide that gender transition might actually be needed. So this is the big issue. This is the other part of the big issue for children, is do they have the language to express? They're very intelligent, but they have no experience. They have very little experience, and they have very little experience of language, what language they have to express these things. So there has to be a big, and one of the problems that arose in the UK, and we seem to have gone along with it here as well, as there's been a jump to an answer before all the questions have been asked. Yes. And you have to ask all the questions. You have to go through the process, because you have to have the child and the full diagnosis, the full understanding of what the child is at, what the child is actually saying, before you go on to the next phase.
Okay.
And we have a problem here. CAMHS, which is where this has to start, is completely undermanned. It's a mess. You know, they say we've caught up on the people who've been neglected. but who has been neglected for them to catch up? You know, so this is the issue why we have to be very, very careful in these areas and to be absolutely sure before we take these measures that we're going with the right treatment.
Okay, thank you very
and
much HFC, indeed. Yes, go ahead,
Greg,
Eileen.
Sorry now.
No, it's fine. This is what it's all about.
The HSC is doing a clinical investigation, a trial clinical investigation into puberty blockers here in Ireland. Mm. And I know that, like, it doesn't matter about the figure if you want, because the figure is not the issue. But you were saying yesterday on your show that it's single figures of the treatment being used in Ireland. So I just think it's like, you know, and I think this conversation is extremely important, and we need platforms like this to be able to express our fears and concerns for children. So I just wanted to say that about the HSC doing it a clinical trial.
It's all very important, and I do believe that these conversations are best had at open, because people are scratching their heads saying, well, when was it decided in the Dáil that such and such would happen, or what views, what opinions we'd take on, or what medical advice are we actually leaning on in this country? Is it overseas? Is it here? You know, we just want info, because we want what's best for our families. Okay, back with more after these. We are in conversation with our Friday panel. It's Emma Gover. You can see her on socials as the Wee Donegal Mammy. Liam Mulligan, retired electronic engineer and member of AINTHU, and Senator Eileen Flynn, an independent senator of cause. Emigration has hit a 17-year high, 70,000 people emigrating over a one-year period. Emigration to Australia, actually, is up at 126% of where it was before. What can we do, if you feel something should be done, to stem that flow? Liam, I'll start with you.
Funnily enough, I was talking to someone in Lidl on Monday whose child has just gone to Australia. And two things. Housing and working conditions, especially in the health services and all health services. Housing is the obvious one. You know, there is a housing commission report. I was away on holidays, so I haven't really looked at it. But since there's no upset in the industry, it's obviously not radical enough. We need to really think. I was at a session in Engineers Ireland, the AGM in November last year, and there was a presentation from an economist that said, in Dublin, you need 100,000 household income to be able to afford a two-bed flat. You know, we can't go ahead on that. We have to take that level down. We have to remove costs. It's no good just shoving money at it and giving the developers more money, because that also increases the cost of social housing. If we could bring a house is affordable for a household with 60 or 70,000, then the government can buy more social housing with the same amount of money as well. And these are the sort of areas that we have to address. But that gets into an hour or a day on its own. And the other area is working conditions. And specifically was said to me about a therapist working in the health service, but they just have a list of patients thrown at them and to get on with it. And it's far too big. They're never going to get around to them with the level of therapy that's needed. And in Australia, they get a list of patients that they can treat. They're given a list of patients that is related to the amount of therapy that those patients need and the amount of time that they can take to do them. Mm. But this is not the system. And I'm in Donegal Down Syndrome, and the treasurer, and a significant amount of our money goes on speech therapy to try and make up for the lack of speech therapy in the HSC. And if we could get more therapists, we would spend more money on it. But the HSC is losing speech therapists to Australia, losing physiotherapists to Australia.
But why are they going there? Because the cost of living in Australia is considerably higher, 7% higher, sorry. Rent is around about the same. It's 2.2% lower in Australia, but it's around about the same. Groceries are 26% more expensive in Australia than they are here. The cost of owning a house is well over 100,000 euro more than it is here. right? So what is it then that is drawing people over? It's the availability of housing, because the grass isn't, if you look at the raw stats, the grass isn't actually greener.
Well, apparently, from a purchasing power point of view, they actually are expecting to be able to get housing. This is what has been presented to them. Now, we had a joke. Are you basically saying that the public service recruiters from Australia that are coming into this country are lying to people, because they're telling people that they have gone to Australia, they are getting a reasonable working conditions, and that they can afford with what they're being paid to buy houses? Because, I mean, we were joking that the only way to stop it at the moment is to break diplomatic relations with Australia and put out international arrest warrants for the public service recruiters. At the moment, you know, these are the areas they see a hope of reasonable working conditions, of doing their job properly, and they are being told, yes, with the income they're being given, they have the potential to get housing.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, anyone who's been out there for a year, 2 years, 3 years, give us some feedback. Emma, what's your view?
I think that there is more to it than absolutely housing, massively. I mean, I'm from the generation of people who have emigrated. You know, I'm in my 30s and a lot of people have emigrated. Some of my friends live in Dubai, they're teachers there. Some live in Australia, some live in Canada. From what I understand from some of them is the package they were offered, they were going to go over there and the accommodation was already in Dubai, especially the accommodation was already going to be provided for them. I know somebody who has gone to be a principal in Abu Dhabi, same scenario, excellent wage package, good way of life, and the apartment came with the job. People who have gone to Australia, but then I also know a cohort of people, might be a wee bit unpopular again, who have gone because they want to experience.
Well, that's not unpopular. Travel. That's lovely. That's a beautiful thing that they want to go and see the world.
Because we would like to say it's all to do, and it absolutely is. I would say the majority of it is the fact that they can't get on the property ladder, or they can't even get a house to rent, never mind get on the property ladder. And as Liam has said, you know, work within the HSE, working for the health service is very difficult. You look at nurses here in Letterkenny, they're triaging up to 50 patients. In Australia, you're triaging up to 5. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Of course you're going to want a better working condition.
Yeah.
And then obviously as well, if you have a young family, I know of young families who have emigrated. And if you have a young family, you know, and you can't get your child the health care that they need here, but you're going to get you're guaranteed accommodation over there. You're guaranteed not to be made homeless in the next month, and you're guaranteed a regular job, regular wage packet, and good working conditions, and good health care for your child. Of course, that's what you're going to want. I mean, I rang a hospital in July because of the waiting list for one of my children. And I was quoted for the child to come in and have the treatment. I was quoted 31,500 for 6 weeks. And, you know, parents don't have that. They don't. And so if you can go somewhere else where you can get a better wage package, you're guaranteed accommodation, and your health, the health service isn't going to be on its knees, you're going to want to go there. And if you're a nurse, it's not even the nurses, though. You know, if we looked at the junior doctors AGM this year, they said, you know, they're actually working unsafe hours.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So even teachers here, like, I know of people who are teaching in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, and they're saying, like, you know, they can teach in Ireland and maybe have up to 20, in some cases 30 plus students in their class, and they mightn't even have one SNA in there. They might be lucky if they have an SNA in there, and they may have an SNA. But if you look at the ratio of children with additional needs, and we're not just talking about ASD here, I have a child with ASD, but we're talking about dyspraxia, dyslexia, and socioeconomic issues that may be affecting the child emotionally. If you have 30 children in that class, maybe one classroom assistant, and maybe 5 kids with additional needs, of course you're going to want to go somewhere else, teach where there's smaller classrooms, and you're going to have more support and better pay.
I think it is an awful lot about the working environment, because Australian vacancy, just to focus on it for a second, is at 1.3%. That's the of all the property, the amount vacant at any one time is 1.3%, which by the calculations that are used here is not enough for it to allow people to shop around and all that kind of stuff. Eileen, though, it does, Senator Flynn, it does confuse me as to why don't we look after our our health professionals properly? You know, why don't we look after our teachers better? Why don't we look after the guards better? You know what I mean? Like, we have, we're told constantly that we're a rich economy and all this kind of stuff, and yet we keep having this conversation, and nurses and doctors and Gardaí have to go on strike and protest to try and get pay that's equitable to elsewhere. We have the headroom, unless we're being lied to. So why don't we look after these people better? And then we wouldn't even be having these conversations, I would imagine, other than those that Emma mentioned that want to go and have Christmas on the beach.
I have to agree with Liam when he talks about the social housing and people not feeling supported in the HSC. Just to say, Greg, I've sat around the education committee, some of the children's committee sometimes, and the disability committee matters as well. And to say that we are not stuck for professionals in this country, we are not stuck for people with high, good degrees in this country. Unfortunately, we don't value workers. We don't treat, as Emma said, with dignity and respect, if you want. And one example of that is in the childcare sector. You know, the childcare sector and early educators are being underpaid, working like extreme long hours a week, trying to bring up maybe their own children, not on a good pension, good wages. Why would you want to work in a sector that doesn't pay good wage? Then you come out and it's spilling rain. And now, obviously, we can't control the weather. But many many a person, like, you know, we have to look at the bigger picture. Why people are emigrating? A lot of people come back. You know, and we talk about valuing and looking after the health system. The health system in this country is standing on one leg. It would absolutely collapse if we didn't have people from other countries in our healthcare profession in this country, you know, and it's unfortunate. But again, I do think there's many solutions there around better packaging, wages that will live up to the cost of living, you know. And sometimes, as you just said rightly there, Greg, we think the grass is greener on the other side, but unfortunately, it's not, you know. I remember years ago, my father saying, if you can't make a good living in Ireland, you're not going to make it anywhere else. But I'd like to see them figures for Donegal.
No, I'd like to see break down
because there's less opportunity, I believe, for young people in Donegal. Now, it's great to have the university, Letterkenny University, and that's really opened up opportunities for young people and for young people to be able to study nursing in Letterkenny as well. But again, like, there's so many inequalities here because you're from rural
Ireland. It's a very good point, and hopefully we'll get those figures a little later in the year. And just to point out, and it's not often really publicised as such, I don't think, in terms of emigration, the 70-year high of 70,000 people emigrating for Ireland from Ireland, 34,000 of them were Irish. So the majority of them were not Irish, so either returning home or whatever it might be. And in terms of the immigration, which is also not often said, 150,000 immigrants, which on the face of it, big scary number, right? Because we're all doomed, as some would have it. 30,000 were Irish people coming home. 27,000 were from the EU. Almost 6,000 were coming over from Britain, and the remainders then were coming from other countries, including Ukraine. Okay, as I say, it's just, I think that's not a figure that's often mentioned, and I thought useful to do so. Eileen Flynn, Senator Flynn, have a lovely weekend. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Greg.
Really appreciate it. Take care of yourself. Liam Mulligan, it's been lovely having you on the programme as well. God bless you. Thank you very much indeed.
Just jump in, Greg.
Yes.
Donegal Down Syndrome is having its church gate collections this weekend. We're very dependent. People of Donegal have been very generous to us, as they are to charities in general. So just remember to have a couple of bob with you if you're going to church. And if you're not going to church, hop up anyway. I'm throwing a couple of bob.
You'll take a drive-by donation. Okay. Yeah. All right. Take care. Emma Gover, thank you very much for your time. God bless you all. Thank you very much indeed.
Greg.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care of yourself. Just to let you know, Seamus Gunn is going to be joining us after 10, answering your legal questions. If you have any, get them into us right now at the usual contacts. Mist and fog has cleared now to leave a mainly dry day with good spells of sunshine. Temperatures 16 to 19 degrees and the winds will be light and variable, which is to be welcomed, isn't it? Many people, maybe people want to leave Ireland as they're paying for everyone else coming into the country. Everyone's being charged double for rent and being kicked out if they can't afford it. I get where you're coming from, but if you look at Australia, for example, the rent prices here and there are equal, and there's just over 1% vacancy rental rate in Australia. So I don't know if that's a factor, and there is some disquiet in Australia with Irish people taking up rental properties. So some of the conversations that are being having here are being had elsewhere. JD Vance, who is Donald Trump's running mate, he blamed us, the Irish. He says that we should have been controlled in our numbers in travelling to America, and quoted the film The Gangs of New York. That's the soon-to-be potentially vice president having issues with the Irish. I'll play that clip for you, Ad, actually, by the way, because he was using language that's often used here to talk about other people. But anyway, we do have to take a break for the news and obituary notices. Don't go anywhere.